Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast, monthly album roundup for the month of February 2019. I am your host, Robert, and, yep, looks like all my copies of manga have been Dick Vitaled. And with me, I have...
Hey, R. Kelly, put your motherfucking head back down, you goddamn bum!
And...
I'm focused now. But it'll go back in a month or so because my hair always grows like a chia pet.
Just pour water over the seeds.
Yeah, join the club. I'm like a mop right now.
See, this is why y'all need to do what I do and not get a haircut at the same weekend that the first Avengers came out. Why has no one responded to that?
I'm just picturing many unpleasant things regarding hair length.
Oh, come on, it's not that bad. But, anyway, yeah, so time for the second month of this 2019 year. The shortest month, of course, because, you know, apparently those fucking drunk-ass Gregorians who invented this system of time measurement couldn't figure out how to evenly space everything apart. But whatever, I don't make the rules. Or do I? Nah, I don't. Trust me, if I made up the rules, this shit would make a lot more sense, and we probably wouldn't still be dealing with fucking daylight savings. Dear God. But yeah, so might as well round up whatever the hell is going on in February. Because, you know, there was, again, some stuff. Not nothing, but obviously we're still warming up to some of the bigger shit, even if there was some big shit here. So let's start off, as usual, with the rock, indie, and folk releases. Yeah, this is part where we recap the, you know, what the hell came out this past month. So for that first category, some of the new releases that happened to come out. There was a new project from Les Butcherettes with Bi/Mental. A new full length from Cherry Glazer was Stuffed and Ready. The latest release from the always on the grind noise act Shoo Shoo with Girl of Basket of Fruit. And then, of course, the much-anticipated new release from Health with Volume 4, Slaves of Fear. And that's with the two colons there. Gotta remember that. It's important for stylistic reasons. Now moving on to some of the more notable metal and hardcore releases that dropped this past month. Starting off with the newest one from Black Metalers Rotting Christ with the Heretics. Metalcore Pioneers Zhao with their new EP Decoding the Mobius Strip. From Astronoid, we had their sophomore self-titled release. From Soen, their newest album Lotus, tiding us over until Tool finally get their act together. The newest project from long-running doom metal act Candlemass with The Door to Doom. The newest album from thrash metal titans Overkill with The Wings of War. The newest project from post-black sludge metalers Downfall of Gaia with Ethic of Radical Finitude, and the much-anticipated return of the ever-so-fine bearded lads in Dream Theater with Distance Over Time. Well, a couple of them are bearded. I don't know what the beard ratio in Dream Theater is. I need to catalog that more intensely. Anyway, moving on to the realm of hip-hop and R&B, we have the newest project from Chaka Khan with Hello Happiness. The latest collaboration of Scarface with Wu-Tang Clan's Ghostface Killa on Scarface Meets Ghostface. We had the newest full length from Insane Clown Posse with Fearless Fred Fury. What up? We had the latest mixtape from Kelani with While We Wait. Apparently there was a new project from Grime Rapper Giggs with Big Bad. Ellipses. That's important. We got a new one here from G Herbo with Still Swervin'. A new collaboration from Wiz Khalifa and Currency with 2009. The much anticipated, I guess, solo album from Migos member Offset with Father of Four. We had a surprise album drop courtesy of Mr. T-Pain with One Up. And last and definitely least... And I'm praying to God that this was not a 7 out of 10. The newest album from Lil Pump with Harvard Dropout. And now last, but certainly not least, some of the pop and electronic stuff. There was, of course, the new Avril Lavigne project, Head Above Water. Florida Georgia Line with Can't Say I Ain't Country. Oh, I very well can say you ain't. Ain't nothing less country than you. We had the new studio album from Luis Fonsi with Vida. Megan Trainor with The Love Train. Oh my god, I just realized that was a stupid pun. And of course, probably the biggest thing that came out this past month, Ariana Grande, following shortly up on her album Sweetener with Thank You, Next. So, like I said, there were some things happening, not so saturated in volume, but there's still some points of highlight here and there. And now is, of course, the part where we all talk about what we were listening to, starting off with Alex rambling about the new Dream Theater record.
Well, I'm gonna lead up to it. I'm gonna build up to it because I got some other things worth mentioning. But
all right.
There were some things I just couldn't really find the time for, so I'm gonna save that for a future possible catch-up segment. Maybe, I don't know, for something. I'll figure something out. But anyway, I have four releases here, all of which are pretty dang good. So yeah, I'm sort of trimming the fat here. So I'm gonna start with Astronoid, the band whose second album is their self-titled album. Always find that kind of weird whenever bands do that, but given that Weezer has about 27 different self-titled albums, I guess it's not too weird. I know, but yeah.
Next
anyway,
month.
Yeah, I know, but whatever. Anyway, Astronoid. Not what I would expect a band considered to be post-metal would sound like. Normally, when I think of post-metal, I think of bands like The Ocean Collective or Isis. Not so much a band that has more of an emphasis on melodic chord progressions, and major chords at that. Kind of a nice change of pace. So, yeah. I actually found out about this album on Sirius XM one morning, and it was with the track I Dream in Lines, and it made me go, huh. This is different, and I can kind of dig it. And the whole album has pretty much a similar melodic, I don't want to say ambient groove to it, but more of an atmospheric groove. That's what I'm trying to think of. Yeah. It's filled with kind of a relaxing atmosphere, which is weird considering this is, well, metal and post-metal, but a lot of this album actually reminds me a lot of some of the more late 2000s melodic metalcore. That's not a bad thing, because I actually really dig that kind of stuff. And I just can't really help but groove along to the tracks and feel comforted with the atmosphere it's creating. It's like Crash Thompson said, it's very relaxing metal for the soul.
Indeed. Yeah,
good stuff. Now on to Health, with their latest offering, Volume 4. And I feel like this could be a good entry point for people who aren't too familiar with the band, myself included. But it does feel like it's a bit of a differing change of pace from what they've done before. Am I correct with that observation?
I mean, in some ways, sure. I kind of feel like it's still, like, maybe hovering in that same wavelength. Like,
yeah.
You can kind of, like, if you listen to this and go back to, like, say, Death Magic, what they released before, you can kind of, like, listen to it without having to adjust too much, so to speak.
Okay. So, yeah. It's a strong album, regardless. It's full of really tight, new metal-ish industrial themes that remind me way too much of that one grime single from late last year. And I want to see Grimes and Health do a collab album.
It would certainly be a hell of a lot better than when she collaborated with Bring Me the Horizon.
Yeah, that was a thing. Oh, ugh. Yeah. So, as we've been talking about some of the lead-off singles for this album, I've been asking for more, please. I got more. It's pretty much more of what we've got, and that's not a bad thing. Really dig it. Strange Days still bangs real hard. Wrong Bag is fucking raucous with how intense it gets. Like, oof. Very loud stuff. I like it. Yeah. Very good. Very accessible. More of this noisy goodness, Health, guys. And maybe they can hook up with Kraftpunk one day and make some sort of delicious, healthy macaroni and cheese food out of it. You never know.
You know, when Kraft Punk isn't talking politics.
Yeah, that is going to be a thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's weird, but whatever. It is what it is. Now for something I'm sure nobody would have expected. I'm going to talk about this Ariana Grande album, Thank You Next.
Oh?
Yeah, so one day I decided at work, you know what? I want to listen to something a little different. So I scroll through Apple Music and I see, oh, look at this. Ariana Grande's new album came out. I think I'll give that a listen. Yeah, it's pretty dang good. And surprisingly, that's considered a hot take, considering quite a few people weren't too happy with Mr. Fantano pretty much giving it the yellow flannel treatment.
Oh, he did?
It was an 8, by the way.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Some people weren't too happy about that, and I wasn't getting that much happiness from a few people either, which, let me just say this. Yes, I think Imagine Dragons is a terrible band, so is Corey Taylor. That has nothing to do with me liking this album, because, okay, story time. As a young kid growing up in California Bay Area, I listened to a lot of pop music. It was pretty much all I had on the radio in the car. Late 90s, early 2000s pop is my shit. Especially when it came from the wonderful minds of Lou Pearlman and Max Martin. Arguably the most influential pop producer ever. Wouldn't you know it? He worked on this album. And I can kind of tell because some of the tracks on here, I'll get to the actual song later. It sounds so much like this could have been a late 90s pop record. That's all good for me. I'm not too keen on more of the trap elements, though. I'm not feeling that. Feels like she's trying a little bit too hard to fit into that mold. But this is important. Contextually, it all fits together. That'll be important later on as well. Because I suppose I gotta talk about the big elephant in the room with this album, don't I? Seven Rings.
Which one? The one Todd talked about.
Yeah. Now, when it comes to music, there are always two different approaches. People who focus more on the singles, and people who focus more on the album. There was even a genre, AOR, album-oriented rock, that talked about this kind of thing. And while I understand that there is a bit of cultural appropriation going on within the context of the song by itself, within the greater context of this album, talking about trying to essentially put on a happy face in the wake of tragedies, personal drama, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's not the best single on the album, but I kind of get it. I kind of get why it's in here, sort of towards the back half of the album, to add to the mood and try and give it a little bit of a crescendo and later on denouement with the last two tracks on it. So, I mean, you can sort of take it either way, but personally speaking, it doesn't bother me that much. I just think the song itself isn't that great. It has too much of the trap vibes going on for its own good, and it doesn't quite work. Although, I will say that the Rodgers and Hammerstein interpolation is pretty good. Thankfully, the last two tracks on the album, the two big singles, Thank You Next and Break Up With Your Girlfriend, I'm Bored, are fantastic. They are fantastic pop jams that remind me so much of the late 90s, early 2000s pop I grew up with as a kid. I'll just say I love that line. I'm so fucking grateful for my ex. That's just good stuff. I especially like the NSYNC interpolation on the last track. Wasn't expecting that. I enjoyed it.
Oh.
Yeah. And this album, mostly hits. It's more hits than miss in this album. Ghostin is incredibly somber given contextually who it's about, you know. Wouldn't you know it, Max Martin worked on that song as well, so a point in the saber for that. So the good outweighs the bad on this album for me. I can dig it. I can hold it up on a pedestal. I can even put it in sort of a top rank in my album of the year list if I can talk. Ugh, getting tongue tied here. And this leads me to once. this was worth the wait. Dream Theater, Distance Over Time.
Woo!
Wouldn't you know it, after putting out the longest album of their career with The Astonishing, they give us their second shortest album of their career with this one. And speaking of that album, yeah, I get it. Not everybody liked it. I personally really enjoyed it. I flew out to New York City to see them perform it live, so that must have count for something. But yeah, I'll just say that Dream Theater has one of the pickiest fan bases just in general.
This is true.
And I will give my interpretation of what many of this sort of pickier side has to say about The Astonishing in the form of one such individual who has for a long time has gone under a name that starts with Mr. and ends with two. Me. The Astonishing was a bunch of Disney crap. James LaBrie can't sing anymore. Mike Mancini's a robot. John Petrucci cares more about his fancy guitars than the music. I can't hear John Myung. They're killing the band, not my Dream Theater. Shut the fuck up, please.
Shut the fuck up. Din, 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 din. You're a fucking cunt.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, this is why I don't really deal with fandoms anymore. Y'all are crazy. Not in a good way. So, yeah, I've learned to just drown all of that crap out. I don't need to deal with it.
Preach.
Yeah. Anyway, as for this album, Distance Over Time, if I could compare it to another album in terms of accessibility, let's see. I'd throw in a little bit of Awake, a little bit of Train of Thought, and a little bit of Dramatic Turn of Events. It has all the meldings of some of their core elements molded into one, with more of an emphasis on rock and guitar tones, which, hey, good for me. Jordan Rudess, his keyboard work isn't as prominent on the bulk of this album as it was on previous releases. Probably to give more of a focus on the guitars. And from what I understand, that's how the album was written. It was written in just under 3 weeks at studio/barn in Monticello, New York, as sort of a band environment. And they were all writing the songs as they were playing along, and yeah, always a good way to approach songwriting. So... I've already talked about the first couple singles, which are the first three tracks on here. Don't need to go deeper into that again. So I don't think we talked about Paralyzed though. So I'll just say this has more of that '90s industrial alt metal groove to it, and the guitar solo sounds a little bit like that ending solo in Periphery's Race Car for some reason. But hey, it's kind of cool.
And that wasn't even the song that had John Petrucci on it.
Yep, that was an entire album before. The track as a whole honestly sounds like it could have come from one of James LaBrie's solo albums, which, that's not a bad thing. He's got some good solo albums on there. I am going to go insane trying to figure out the patterns for the final track, quote-unquote final track, Pale Blue Dot, because that whole opening section is in 1916. That's not a year. That's the time signature. 1/16th notes per beat per bar, and that just makes my head hurt. And this is probably the most traditional Dream Theater song of the album, you know, in the quote unquote traditional sense, because it has the heavy verses and the crazy interlude section that combines elements from Metropolis, Dance of Eternity, Octavarium, Outcry. It's nutty, it's frantic, it's gonna make you really want to improve your guitar chops like I've been trying to do. I want to learn that opening riff to At Wit's End, even though it's in like 11/16 time. Oh, those guitar arpeggios. Oh, those guitar arpeggios. It's, yeah, let me talk about that track, At Wit's End. It's the other of the two miniature epics on the album. And it's pretty much a tale of two halves. The first half is the heavy, metal-driven introduction of the song before it comes down to more of a majestic, somber, piano-driven second half with that beautiful, soaring guitar solo from John Petrucci. And a little bit of a bonus section at the end, which sounds like it was taken directly from the control room. Very nice, very nice. There's a bit of a rather funky bass riff on the track S2N, Signal to Noise. Yeah, that pretty much makes up for the more subdued bass on The Astonishing, because, whew, I'm feeling some Jacob Astorius right there. Though I'm not too keen on the voice filters that they put on LaBrie's lines in the early verses on the track. It's kind of weird. It's kind of weird. Oh yeah, forgot to mention the one other thing. When I was talking about that one picky fan. Yeah, a lot of people have been complaining that Mike Mangini, since he came into the band, he hasn't really done much outside of being a human drum machine. Room 137 would like to have a word with you. He's got some very fine chops on that track and on S2N. And he even wrote the lyrics for Room 137. I'm not going to go too deep into the lyrical content, but just know it revolves around quantum physics.
Of course it does.
Yeah, of course it does. Yeah. And it has some very sludgy, nasty, dirty riffs coming out at the end as well, which, very nice. Worth noting, this album has what they call a bonus track in it, Viper King. It's pretty much the band channeling their inner Deep Purple to create a rock and roll track. I'm not going to be too mean. I will say James LaBrie's vocal delivery isn't the best on this one track. It's a little too, it's going a little too high up in his range, but maybe that's just me. Maybe that's just me. I do want to say this album came out at the worst possible time because when the Billboard's charts came out that had this album on it. This came right after the Academy Awards, right after Shallow came up to number one on the Hot 100, and wouldn't you know it, with fucking Bohemian Rhapsody still at the top of the rock charts. You know something's bad when this album is sandwiched between a bunch of greatest hits albums and Bohemian Rhapsody, the soundtrack. And man,
I am disappointed.
Steep competition that came out in that same week because we had those albums from Offset and Juice WRLD. This album debuted at number 24 on the Billboard 200. That just breaks my heart. But at least for one moment in time, this album actually was at number one on the iTunes charts. If only for a couple of hours, it still counts. So, suck it, Offset.
Whoop!
Yeah. I think this is a fantastic album. It's heavy in all the right ways. It's more of a back-to-basics kind of album, considering what they did last time, which I'm not going to get into the picky fan voice again, but, guys, sometimes you just gotta go crazy and just craft a crazy story. You know? Sometimes you just gotta do it. But yes, there's only one thing left to say about this album. Wow. And that is actually, that's actually an Easter egg in S2N. You'll hear it in the mix right at the end of that instrumental interlude. It's, I don't know who came up with that idea, but thank you.
Oh, I think I missed that. I thought you were just taking a jab at me.
No, it's actually in the album.
Okay, then.
Yeah, so that's what I've got. Go read my full review of the album on the site if you'd like to.
Yeah, do that. Give us traffic so we can afford McNuggets.
Yeah, I finally wrote something for the first time in like 8 months.
All right, and with all of that talk out of the way, now we move on to the middle portion of the podcast, which is time for Mark to tell us all the albums he listened to in order to avoid Harvard dropout.
Yes, you know, he's probably surprised later on. So, first, I'm going to drop a little surprise for you as what happened to get mentioned. Some album from Jürgen Blackrock titled Anima Mysterium. But those who are wondering, wait, I heard that name before. Yes, you have. That's the name of the rapper that alongside Kendrick Lamar and Vince Staples on the Ops, the soundtrack of the song from the Black Panther soundtrack, in which her verse she killed.
Still the best song on that soundtrack, by the way.
Yep, that's true. And now with this new album coming, they figured that, you know, now that we're Ops together, people to check her out. She had an album probably prior to that, like 2013, was titled Return of the Astrogoth, and now you got her second album. And I figured, I'll just check this one out and to see why TDE would be interested in put it on the subject in the first place. And that being said, it's pretty good. I will say that this is one of those albums, like the thing with her is that her things in the album are pretty much like, you know, very, you know, hot. Like a high-end sci-fi concept type of shit. The high-end sci-fi type of shit with some very futuristic beats that's very, you know, very South African beats that got some boom bap and some horror dark wave type of shit. Like, the production in this album is handled by somebody named Kniff Dashi Hotmaster. Gonna be real easy to fuck up. Along with Joel Alnaski on Common Form and Seven Gatsby on Obsidian Night. And I will say, much like rappers like A$AP Rock or Dale the Honky Phone City or Irish Bass Palaces, her lyrics are kind of dense as fuck, meaning you have to look back and see what the fuck she's saying, because sometimes I go back to read what she's saying in order to get it. A challenge, yeah, an interesting challenge. Like, it's interesting to see what the hell she's saying, but it's still kind of good. Like on the first song where she said, "Observing distant memories faded over ages, is in the pain over remembrance, lead the structure over ever changing. Saw shape shifting inspired the nihilist, deciphered my script, and flashed it on self a mass scientist. Spit fire water online in Hydra, aloof in the distance of the constellation on Libra." And yes, I know it says Libra, but it's pronounced like Libra. You know, on the fit. I don't know, but yeah, I will say her flow is very good on these beats. Like, these are beats that pretty much are made for her. They are made for her because like she's the one that can handle those beats. And the things I don't know, other beings, the humankind, exposing how humans are. Kind of, you know, violent as fuck, which we are, and you know, the road to peace. That ain't gonna be no one stop. That's gonna be like a long ass trip where you say, "Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet?" No, you're not gonna be there. You're fucked. And we'll say like this album's really interesting. Listen to the in order to get to the things, to get to what she's talking about, to get all the experimental stuff happening, and the guest features are pretty good too. Although I will say this, I'm in the guest features and see which name you recognize. The Story himself, Fifi the Ride Blaster, Brave Star, Titania Mozia, damn, Jack Tripper with no C, Cool Keith.
I know that one.
Ha! See, yeah. He's on track, Monster Tax, which, okay, all features do well here, but they do the job because you do their job and they're very well, but they don't overshadow Yugen because she's like, you know, she's very much the head honcho of this album, as she should be. And again, this is very interesting album to check it to. I'm kind of glad I actually heard of this album so I can, you know, I can get into it. I wish I would check it earlier because it was released like the 1st of February, and I figured, and I checked it out like during like the last, pretty much the last few days of memory. It was like I was late in that, but then again, if I did check earlier, I would have to take a long, you know, do a bit longer. You see people, these albums like this, they require you to get your attention because it's not just some, you know, what a quick rant that I gotta do. But yeah, this is really an interesting album, and maybe we will listen to this. I can definitely see it, have more attention. Yeah, it's very good. It's a very damn good album from her, and I'm glad to see you can Black Rock, you know, get some more, get people to know her more, especially after Ops, because this album is pretty good. And now we get to the other album that review February. That is Czarface and Ghostface Killah with, well, Czarface meets Ghostface.
Woo!
So as we last left, well, as you know, last year Czarface did a collaboration with MF Doom, which, you know, some of you's Doom, and while I didn't like that album, I did say the album, well, it didn't wow me. It did what it needed to do. It is still good. And now you figure, hey, Ghostface now. And now he's talking about that Doomstalks is never going to come out.
Yeah.
And, okay, and look at the tracks. It would be like 12 tracks, about 40 minutes. And the only feature being is Kendra Morris on vocals in some songs. I'm going to say this. It's definitely what it is. It's like what it is. It's Ghostface and Czarface doing, I don't really, do some bars over these crazy, boom bap comic book type of beats. It's pretty much what you expect. I'm not gonna say it's good or bad, I'm not saying it's bad, it's just say, like, if you know you're coming in for it, you're gonna have a good time. And I had a good time with this, like, and do like one song here, like Morning Ritual, where Ghostface does a storytelling, where he done it with that haunting piano and horror song. It sounds like a horror movie, and it looks like Esther had a verse where he thinks someone's stealing his money, but apparently she just wanted to get him some breakfast, which is kind of like crazy in the mind of his. Speaking of songs that sound like from a horror movie, the King Kong Voices does sound like this is like a horror track, which you got Kendra Morris doing the vocals like she's in a ghostly choir, like even going to say it sounds like I'm in a horror fucking church or something right now. Like, okay, well, you got that on point. And interesting enough, the song Iron Claw, the single Iron Claw, where Ghostface this is about people who came to street life thinking that they're hard, but they had no dream or street cred around them. And there's a line in here where it goes like this. See the young boys murder you. None of these niggas ever heard of you. We popped a few things on the curb or two. The shit out laying vertical. Now, according to the lyrics I found on Genius, it's a jab. I fixed a jab against 6ix9ine song Billy. And given that situation he's been through, well, and how he's been snitching lately, yeah, Ghost was right about. Yeah, Ghost was. Ghost had a point about that. And there's even some references that Inspector Deck says on the song Magical Stars, where he says, nowadays they took hate and they made it cool. I felt like Dame Dash and Painted Fool. That talk major bull about because follow a playful of food and fighting, so playful fool. Arkansas kicked the city. Kiki never loved me. She was doing the shiggy. He talked about that damn drink, so that stupid challenge, but in a good way he did it. And then, you know, there's a lot of references around here, which he referenced stuff like Star Wars, 007, and Get Smart in this one song, Super Soldier Serum, where he says, I'm part flying fleet, part geeky guy that likes CGI, part smack you, I don't need a reason why, he can lie in your Sweetie Pie, freaking season 5, fuck with Starface, now that's how people die, hey Mark, my face sharp, my stage smart, brave heart, let the dead light, Ray Park, I mean like Death Maul for y'all, y'all on step 2. And, oh yeah, another line. You know, like, off the grid, Maxwell Smart, so I live Daniel Craig. Excuse me, yeah, I'm so slick. And Martin Sue's thing resisted. This means I can't be scratched or birthed up in it. Oh, and I want to mention this. The last track of the song is the title, post-credit scene. It's like a Marvel stinger at like hip-hop version of it. It's like only this missing movie says Swordfish will be back in something, I don't know, Avengers Endgame, I don't know. They're gonna be facing Thanos. They're gonna be Thanos in a rap battle.
Maybe that'll be the season premiere for epic rap battles of history.
But yeah, like I said, I'm just what you expect from Zarface. Like, you got the weird boom mouth sound, you got the sampling and weird effects, and it's pretty much, I think, on par with the Clash of Doom. It's still an album that is worth checking out. That's worth checking out. And we'll say, like, well, I think the Ghostface, like, if I think about what Ghostface is, he do sound more gruff than usual. He does sound like he's got more growth for age. At least that's what I think. But yeah, this album pretty much did his thing. And I recommend it. And now with that, I'm gonna get the two speed rounds. Yes, listen to Health Volume 4, Space of Fear. And as somebody who, well, only knows little bit of Health, I say I really enjoyed this album. It got that very, very, very hard industrial sound of like genre music that I could get into. This is some pretty good shit. It actually gets you hyped up and helps me awake when I'm driving.
Everybody here needs to get more healthy.
Yeah. And, okay, another speed round I want to get to is Kalani While We Wait. Yeah, so this mixtape, this not track mixtape, about 31 minutes, which is pretty good. And I'll say this, if you like some very ethereal R&B songs from Kalani, like, she gets the job done. I do think she's a good, I said before that I do like Kalani, and she's a child since now. She knows she's with child now, just because she's been pregnant, I guess, because she dropped something before, you know, she was giving birth. But yeah, this is a pretty okay mixtape that you got some real smooth R&B sounds going in here and there. And it's not too bad and stuff. Like, she did with Music Soul Child, an artist I ain't heard in a long while. Which, okay. Alright, that sounds good. Like, there was a good cuts in there. Like, you got that and Nunya with Don Kennedy. And I still like Nice with this. Like, even if it's, like, very, usually very, like, kind of okay. I still do dig track a lot. But yeah, all these sounds, like, they all sound very good to me. They all sound very, like, very, you know, if you're R&B type of shit, which I can get with. Features not too bad. You got with your Soul Child, Dog Kennedy, Ty Dolla $ign, and three Six Lack Mafia. I mean, Six Lack Blacks, whatever. But yeah. Like I said, this mixtape. Yeah, she got a good mixtape. It's pretty good. And now, Rob, I'm trying to disappoint you, or. When you mentioned one pump.
Oh, no.
I actually did check.
Why? You didn't have to.
What? I need something to rant about. Well, that's one of them. I got another one coming up, but...
Top 10 anime plot twists.
Yes, Little Pump's Harvard dropout. Yeah, it's boring. This shit is boring as fuck.
Wow.
This shit is boring. Shocker. As fuck. Yeah, no shock. Like I listened to this shit twice because need something to rant about because I ain't did this shit all year. Well, he just started, but yeah, this is pretty boring. Like, movies like it's very well. I mean, I know people expect
well, okay, well, nobody's enough little pump to do some foul shit, but except just make a bunch of, a bunch of bigger checks that really aren't that good or kind of short. I mean, they even put that I Love It track on there, the one Kanye West, he did with Kanye West, which would be on his album if it got released, which it didn't. And even after the weirdness of that video, this track is still kind of boring. I noticed two times, but each track just keep, going in and out of one ear. And yeah, most of these they're kind of forgettable. I've been looking up the names of this track. That's how forgettable it is. Like, I look up the names of the fucking track I listen to. You still got Iskete in there, which okay. And what else you got? B.I.D. with Lil Wayne on there, and Stripper Name, which with 2 Chainz of YG. And I was thinking, you know what? Why do I like YG again? Just a big question. Why I like him in the first place? Because right now you're starting to realize that, yeah, like, that's all I got to say. Like, most of these tracks are pretty forgettable. They're pretty forgettable trap shit that you're not gonna remember in 5 minutes. Cause after listening to this album, I didn't remember in 5 minutes. But you know what? Here's another shocker. This might be bad, but it ain't the worst thing to listen to that month. And this one, you didn't mention, which actually good for you, cause I searched for more shit than you. The last album I'm about to talk about is from one named Gunna. As in that guy who puts up with the other motherfucker, Little Baby. And his mixtape titled Drip or Drown 2. Which, this thing uses drip. He used the word drip a lot. Like, most of his catalog, it says drip something. It's either drip season, drip harder, drip. Be drip or drown, drip, drip, drip. Damn, that should have been called "Are You Wet, Motherfucker?" Which, well, it's
sounds more like he needs to
water.
Drip these nuts.
Maybe he's just a big fan of Juvia from Fairy Tail. You know, drip, drip, drop. You know.
Yeah, and I'm gonna say what people said about Gunna most of the time. He's basically a warmer version of Young Thug.
Oh.
Scratch that. I came up versus a Young Thug.
Ew.
Oh, that's even
and
worse.
The thing is, he signed on Young Thug's label, and he's the second producer of this album. And he's a feature here as well. And I figured, you know what? If we hear him and Young Thug together on this album, you thinking, maybe Young Thug ain't that bad. At least he sounds more better than him, because Gunna is just straight up, well, your very basic ass trap rapper, who's pretty much talk the same shit, but not the interesting. Here's one for insult. You like it bad when Playboi Carti does better than you on your own track?
Oh,
yeah. And this is like 48 minutes, and this is an album that you should not listen to in your car, because you will fall the fuck asleep, or you will be drowsy listening to this shit. Usually when I be at work waiting for the place to open, because I wait for somebody to open. I sit in my car listening to what music to round up, and I figure, you know what, I might as well do some ranch shit, and I'm like, I'm this shit put me to sleep. I can't, I mean, this just sounds boring, and oh my god, people actually liking this motherfucker, or people actually give a fuck about him. I mean, it's either him or that other motherfucker, Little Baby. And not to mention the beats are also boring as fuck as well. keep getting this one guy whose name is Wheezy, different Wheezy, different Wheezy. He's a producer. Not, I mean, he doesn't have an H in it. You know, like Wheezy Jefferson, Wheezy. Yeah, that, you know, that type of shit. But yeah, this is just some basic 808s, like 808s hi hats, some other shit that I keep forgetting. But then again, I should forget about this because this album is so boring. But yeah, I'm not even angry. I'm just laughing. Like, I'm just laughing like, fuck, like, what? Like, well, let's do it now. I gotta do it again. So there's that. Yeah. All I gotta say is March, it's gonna be packed for me. Just saying, because I'm gonna let you know on that, because I'm gonna have more fun during that month, or a lot more records.
And a lot less gonna.
Yep.
Thank God for that. But anyway, now the middle third of this podcast is done, and now we go on to the last third, which I believe is the fourth third. I don't know, I'm not good with numbers, which probably means I should choose a different college major instead of stats, but anyway. So yeah, as always, going to start off with my top picks here, of which I have four, and this first one has already been discussed twice. Of course, gotta touch on some health. Volume 4, Slaves of Fear, and Knuckles, featuring Dante from the Devil May Cry series. So yeah, it's been quite a bit. I feel like it's been, what, I think it was like 2015 or so since, like, you know, Death Magic came out. Or maybe that was 2016. Anyway, it's been a few years. So, yeah, a long time for, like, Volume 4 to come out. And so, it's, as I kind of said already, it's maybe not too far advanced from where that last album was before. Like, a lot of it is very much still in that same place. So, like, you know, the ominous, like, crystalline process vocals over top a lot of these bomb, like, you know, industrial beats with occasional, like, serene elements. Like, the fucking aggressive, stomping, punk, industrial, like, punk energy of the album opener Psychonaut, for example. That's, you know, pretty heavy. There's the robotic chugs of, like, the guitars in Feel Nothing. The dark, industrial, booming bass of the song God Bother, which is really dramatic. Especially with a lot of its, like, double kick runs kind of sounding like, you know, just straight up metal shit in there. Bouncing back and forth between dark, industrial, moody vocals, all of that. It's still very much there, but it's still just, like, you know, just done really well in terms of how it can balance that and even offset the intensity when it needs to, with tracks like Black Static and Rat Wars having a bit of a slower pace to them. Hell, The Message has kind of a dance groove, all things considered. And especially considering songs like, you know, the aforementioned Wrong Bag, which has a lot of atonal, like, droning, whirring, and bass distortion, this general grinding metallicness against your senses, only to be immediately offset by the ending part where the synths get all shimmering and crystalline and everything. So again, not an advancement, more a refinement of what has come before. And now moving on to my second album here. So, how about that Dream Theater record, huh? Now, just to, you know, maybe bring this up again, I thought The Astonishing was fine. Like, it's serviceable enough, but I think the worst thing I could say about it is that it's not an album I went back to all that much. I don't know, like, something about it just kind of felt like, I mean, I could probably be listening to other things. Like, I don't know, something about it kind of feel like a chore, so to say, like, you know, depending on my mood. Again, not bad or anything, it's just I had little motivation to revisit it. So I was kind of wondering what this one would do, given that, you know, not only is it, like, pretty short, all things considered, and hell, it's the last album they're releasing this decade. So how does Dream Theater cap off the first decade of their existence to not have, you know, Mike Portnoy on the drums? Because that's been a pretty wild trip to experience through the 2010s, hasn't it? Think about it. Already been, like, 10 goddamn years, pretty much.
Yeah, I remember reading about that in high school before I was leaving one day, and I was like, what the fuck? Ugh.
I still remember re-binging that documentary series on YouTube over and over. That was a trip. But I'm proud to see that they, you know, close things out with, you know, quite the bang. And I think the bang is the key thing here. Like, if there's one way to characterize this album compared to, you know, a lot of the stuff they've done recently, it would be instant gratification. Like, it's not an album that, like, makes you wait too long to get to, like, the bigger payoffs. Like, it opens right off with Untethered Angel, which, quite frankly, is still a jam. That, you know, descending, you know, sort of pre-verse riffs, the ominous organ synths, the slow-building grooves and the drums and the chugging guitars. It's all just satisfying banger-ass shit, especially when it goes into the, you know, the usual Dream Theater, like, extraneous show-offiness and everything. Then when it gets into fucking the second track, Paralyzed, and man, is that a fucking just a monster of a grooving ass banger and shit. Kind of a new metal groove to it. It almost kind of feels like it could be like a bonus track on like a Slipknot album. Shit, even when it has like the pianos and keys over top, it still bangs hard and menacing as everything. And that's just like the slower tracks. Obviously, things pick up on speed and tracks like Fall Into the Light, which is more of like a thrashier sort of thing. You know, these really savage driving tremolo riffs and just a general like driving pace that in a way almost kind of reminds me of some of the bangers you'd hear on albums like, I don't know, Systematic Chaos. That's just kind of where my mind was at. And speaking of Slipknot grooves, holy shit, Room 137.
Yeah.
I don't know what that room is, but I want to be in that room. Because that room sounds like it's a fucking rager. You just feel that low, visceral groove of the off-kilter guitars and Mike Mangini's really strong, you know, tom grooves on the track. All throughout, it has just that fucking strong, heavy, you want to bang your head. It's like, shit, this might be my favorite track on the album, probably my favorite Dream Theater song in a long-ass while. Just goes to show off how, like, well Dream Theater does when they decide to want to, like, they just want to get to the point and write some bangers. And, of course, there's that satisfying groove with the off-kilter rhythms in S2N, which I would probably argue is one of the most quintessentially, you know, Dream Theater-y Dream Theater tracks and everything. Especially with those sick John Myung bass lines. Thank God he gets to be prominent and in the mix again, isn't it? I missed him.
Yeah.
There's all the weird vocal work from James LaBrie, including that, like, digitized process thing leading into the first verse. Just a really great menacing vibe to a lot of it overall. The layers of synth and keyboard work from Rudess and Petrucci's, you know, solo-y parts. Like, this is just everyone showing off in general. It's like, this is... I might actually have to put this on my best of the year list, because this is the most that I've enjoyed a Dream Theater album since a dramatic turn of events.
Oh. Yeah, I want to mention this. Tyler Larson, Music is Win, he did an interview with John Petrucci at NAMM, and Petrucci told him the guitar tone he was going for on this album was basically the embodiment of a Five Guys burger. Did you feel that way when you were listening to it?
No wonder this album made me hungry. Then again, it might just be the fact that I don't ever eat breakfast before I go to work. But it certainly is stacked, thick, and meaty. So, yeah, mission accomplished. Mm-hmm. Now we just got to figure out how to get the extra bacon on there, the green peppers, the A1 steak sauce, the grilled onions, the raw onions, the grilled mushrooms. Did I mention extra bacon?
Okay, now I'm getting hungry.
Damn. Five Guys is great. But now let's move on to album number 3 here. And yes, this is the self-titled from the lads in Astronoid. And this one, I didn't have the radio experience, you know, like Alex said, but I did see this name floating around quite a bit throughout, like, the metal news sites and blogs and everything. They're like, holy shit, this is amazing. And I'm like, I didn't see the Crash review yet. Like, I listened to the album weekend it came out, then saw the Crash review afterwards, so just for reference. And it's like, you know, I'm kind of surprised that this kind of passed by my, like, viewpoint back in, I think that first album came out in 2016, I want to say, or maybe 2017, because the sound of this is kind of extremely my shit as far as post-metal is concerned. The best example I can think of is, like, kind of think of it exists somewhere between, like, I guess the ethereal kind of melodic tremolo heavy sensibilities of Russian Circles and kind of the more new age gospel, like hard rock sensibilities of the Devin Townsend Project. And I kind of make it sense here. I kind of like, that's just where my mind veered off to.
I getcha.
Yeah, the guitar production, first off, is very, like, crystalline and shimmering with, you know, the pleasant walls of guitar chords and, of course, the aforementioned tremolo melodies floating above them to kind of drive home just the drifting vibe of everything. Meanwhile, the drums are very, you know, they can go along with the groove but also be very dense in their fills and get surprisingly heavy, like the pounding, rolling tom fills of I Dream in Lines. And, you know, the sort of low swooping guitars in there as well, just kind of amping up that lower end, you know, amidst all the floatiness and everything. Of course, there's also those fast double kick parts and stuff like that. Songs like Lost, which also make great use of, like, you know, chords and tremolo, you know, to lift up the soaring parts, set off a bit by some of the slower grooves. And then, of course, back into the heaviness with stuff like Water, the fucking stomping kick and the chugging guitar progression. Shit, when you listen to a track like I Wish I Was There While the Sun Set, it literally is the closest to hitting that kind of metal, gospel, new age vibe as, like, the DTB jam, especially as the guitars, like, veer back and forth viciously between the low-end chugs and, you know, the vast tremolos and everything. It's pleasing to the soul. It's a very beautiful sort of album. And I know it's weird to say even in, like, a post-metal context, because, as Alex said, you might be tempted to think of that in more of kind of the dingy, sludgier sides of it. Your Pelicans, your Isises, your Neuroses, your Russian Circle, shit like that. But give this one a watch. I mean, a listen, rather. Why did I say watch?
Yeah, I don't know. One more thing about this album. There is a section in Ideal World where the entire progression is offbeat. Very well done.
Nice. Indeed. Italian chef hands. And now for the last of my topics here. This is one I decided to check out the band's discography on a whim. Just because I guess I was looking for new stuff to check out and it seemed like it was building a decent amount of hype. That would be from this band Downfall of Gaia with Ethic of Radical Finitude. Their name had floated by me, as I said, from time to time. I was like, hey, you know, maybe I'll check something out. I think it was just, like, digging through news sites, looking for new songs just for the whim of it. And going through their past records, I was impressed. They're definitely one of the better bands I've heard that are kind of adjacent to, like, kind of sludgy meets post-black metal kind of thing. I know it sounds like a weird combination of genres, but trust me, this band actually makes it work pretty well. And I think this album right here is probably the most refined that their sound has made. Has been to date. There's a certain flow you kind of get used to listening to some of their albums, and you kind of hear it with, like, the first, okay, so there's, like, a 2-minute intro song, and then you get the first major track, The Grotesque Illusion of Being, and immediately it benefits from really strong production that makes the music actually sound pretty good. It uses the same kind of, like, you know, it's heavy on the guitar tremolos and the melancholic chord progressions, those, you know, screeching vocals and everything, and even the blast-beating drums, but because the production is so much clearer, there's more of a punch, and it's not, like, that annoying lo-fi, you know, speak-and-spell recording-style type of thing. And it's kind of grinding against, like, you know, those sensibilities as it's going on through the first couple minutes, but then eventually there's, like, a break where it's just the drums sort of, you know, rolling on the rides, there's, like, clean, you know, guitar chords and everything. Even a couple somber piano keys here and there to kind of break up the vibe. That moodiness kind of helps break up, you know, the momentum and really, like, diversify the experience. Kind of makes the heavy hard parts hit a little bit harder. And it kind of goes that throughout the whole album, kind of back and forth between that. Because it's only, like, 6 tracks and it's about 40 minutes long. So, yeah, you could expect that there's some monsters here. Like, a couple 5-minute tracks, a 7-minute track, 2 9-minute tracks, basically. You know, kind of that nature. Then the next track after that, We Pursue the Serpent of Time, definitely has a bit of a sludgier intro with more pounding, booming toms as it ramps up to, you know, the fast driving black metal stuff. There's breaks here and there where the screeching vocals give way to a more moaning, moodier delivery over kind of a halftime double kick drum break, which is definitely a nice touch. Sort of expands and varies up the songwriting tricks a little bit, including, like, you know, the clean guitar break emphasized by, like, just, you know, drum rolls on the snare, you know, kind of having a satisfying back and forth between those moods across the whole 9 minutes. And again, from track to track, it really knows how to manage that momentum. Like, it never really gets, like, too dull. It never really lets the, you know, any single part drag on for longer than it has to. And it always just leaves everything feeling like just, you know, this really intense, kind of darkly beautiful, cathartic experience at times. Even when you're listening to, like, the post-metal bridge of Guided Through a Starless Night. It's just, everything flows really well on this album, and for something I kind of checked out on a lark, I'm very, very satisfied with my decisions here. And now to go on to the quick round of albums here, stuff that, you know, I may have liked to various degrees but don't have much to say about. Starting off with the new Les Butcherettes record by Mental. It's a decent album of theirs, definitely veers more on the weird avant-garde tendencies, more so than outright punk influence. Don't really have much more to say beyond it than that, though. Next up is the new project from Soen with Lotus. Once again, the band leaning really hard on their own Tool inspirations, with things like the instrumental grooves, with like the drums and bass and everything. And even the vocal style to a certain extent. I mean, don't get me wrong, like, despite what I'm saying, it's still a pretty solid commercial prog release in its own right. Just don't expect it to, you know, maybe take up too much space next to what I'm sure is that deluxe edition of the new Tool album that I'm sure you probably will own in the future. Up next, Candlemass, The Door to Doom. Now, I can't speak with authority on this band. Like, I know they're basically the pioneers of doom metal. Hell, they pretty much invented the term with their album Epicus Doomus Metallicus. And this is my first album of theirs, so I don't really have the authority or expertise to say too much on that. But, you know, as a doom record, I found it pretty solid. It's pretty much a textbook example of the genre, and even a pretty sweet guest guitar solo from Mr. Tony Iommi of Black Sabbath. Well, formerly of Black Sabbath. They're obviously gone by this point. And then last, but certainly not least of my quick picks would be, now this is a band that I did check out for the first time this month and then plowed through the rest of their discography, and that would be the noise act Shushu with Girl with Basket of Fruit. And yeah, this is definitely a weird one. It's as you're going from track to track, you're never quite sure what to expect. You're always caught off guard, like, by its various breeds of noise, the bizarre-ass vocal effects, the atonal rambling, the creepy moaning vocal deliveries, the unusual percussive instrumentation in tracks, lots of glitchy electronic beats. I'm pretty sure I heard a didgeridoo at some point. And, you know, I will say, compared to all their other albums beforehand, this is probably the most synthetic of theirs, like in terms of relying a lot on weird glitchy effects and electronic processing. I mean, I kind of like the album overall. Like, I don't even really know how I can describe it to you with anything vaguely relevant. Like, I guess think, like, Daughters by way of Death Grips Government Plates? I don't fucking know. Like, I liked it, but again, this is textbook definition of an acquired taste. So if noise ain't your shit, stay far away. And that's basically about it. Yeah, I may have heard some okay albums and some great albums, but I didn't really hear any bad albums. So, yeah, you're all are alone on that until the next album roundup, basically.
Yeah. No offset from us because, we had better albums to listen to this month.
And honestly, it would have mostly just been us making fun of his shitty cereal taste.
As basic as those beats.
Not even Reese's Puffs? Wow, you suck.
Wait, the Reese's Puffs? You basic ass nigga.
Yeah, you want to know what they are? Because, Fruit Loops, Cinnamon Toast Crunch, Fruity Pebbles, 3, 2, 1.
oh wow, that's kind of
not even Cocoa Pebbles. Ugh.
Damn, man, that is the weirdest cereal taste I've ever seen.
Read your whole cereal bar, man.
Jesus Christ. And hey, you know, if you need some help, you can come see our cereal bar. We might be fighting in front of it, but at least we have better cereal. And yeah, that basically about does it for this album roundup. So, you know, be sure to, you know, check the playlist that we have for these albums down in the description of this shit. Always make sure to, you know, follow the relevant links there as well. I'm not doing the full plug thing twice. You already know, like, by this point. So, yeah, with all that out of the way, thank you for listening. We'll, of course, see you in the next main episode. And, of course, for the next album roundup in March, where I'm sure the Weezerpocalypse will finally take hold. But, yeah. Yeah. But, until next time. Dude, seriously, Cinnamon Toast Crunch is overrated. What the hell?